A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Stave 2. The First of the Three Spirits. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that looking out of bed he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. He was endeavouring to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes when the chimes of a neighbouring church struck the four quarters. So he listened for the hour. To his great astonishment, the heavy bell went on from 6 to 7, and from 7 to 8, and regularly up to 12, then stopped. 12. It was past 2 when he went to bed. The clock was wrong. An icicle must have got into the works. 12? Why, it isn't possible, said Scrooge, that I can have slept through a whole day and far into another night. It isn't possible that anything has happened to the sun, and this is 12 at noon.
The idea being an alarming one, he scrambled out of bed and groped his way to the window. He was obliged to rub the frost off with the sleeve of his dressing gown before he could see anything, and could see very little then. All he could make out was that it was still very foggy and extremely cold, and that there was no noise of people running to and fro and making a great stir, as there unquestionably would have been if night had beaten off bright day and taken possession of the world. Scrooge went to bed again, and thought, and thought, and thought it over, and could make nothing of it. The more he thought, the more perplexed he was, and the more he endeavoured not to think, the more he thought. Marley's ghost bothered him exceedingly. Every time he resolved within himself, after mature inquiry, that it was all a dream, his mind flew back again like a strong spring released to its first position, and presented the same problem to be worked all through. Was it a dream or not? Scrooge lay in this state until the chime had gone 3 quarters more, when he remembered, on a sudden, that the ghost had warned him of a visitation when the bell tolled 1. He resolved to lie awake until the hour was past, and considering that he could no more go to sleep than go to heaven, this was, perhaps, the wisest resolution in his power. The quarter was so long that he was more than once convinced he must have sunk into a doze unconsciously and missed the clock. At length it broke upon his listening ear. "Ding dong!"
"A quarter past," said Scrooge, counting.
"Ding dong!"
"Half past," said Scrooge.
"Ding dong!"
"A quarter to it," said Scrooge.
"Ding dong!"
"The hour itself," said Scrooge triumphantly. "And nothing else."
He spoke before the hour bell sounded, which it now did with a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy 1. Light flashed up in the room upon the instant, and the curtains of his bed were drawn. The curtains of his bed were drawn aside, I tell you, by a hand. The curtains of his bed were drawn aside, and Scrooge, starting up into a half-recumbent attitude, found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them, as close to it as I am now to you. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white, as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. The arms were very long and muscular, the hands the same, as if its hold were of uncommon strength. It wore a tunic of the purest white. It held a branch of fresh green holly in its hand, and, in singular contradiction of that wintry emblem, had its dress trimmed with summer flowers. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light, by which all this was visible. Even this, though, when Scrooge looked at it with increasing steadiness, was not its strangest quality. For as its belt sparkled and glittered now in one part and now in another, and what was light one instant at another time was dark, so the figure itself fluctuated in its distinctness, being now a thing with one arm, now with one leg, now with 20 legs, now a pair of legs without a head, now a head without a body.
"Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?"
asked Scrooge. "I am." The voice was soft and gentle, singularly low, as if instead of being so close beside him, it were at a distance.
"Who and what are you?"
Scrooge demanded. "I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?"
inquired Scrooge, observant of its dwarfish stature. "No, your past." It put out its strong hand as it spoke and clasped him gently by the arm. "Rise and walk with me." It would have been in vain for Scrooge to plead that the weather and the hour were not adapted to pedestrian purposes, that bed was warm and the thermometer a long way below freezing, that he was clad but lightly in his slippers, dressing gown and nightcap, and that he had a cold upon him at that time. The grasp, though gentle as a woman's hand, was not to be resisted. He rose, but finding that the spirit made towards the window, clasped his robe in supplication.
"I am mortal," Scrooge remonstrated, "and liable to fall."
"Bear but a touch of my hand," said the spirit, "and you shall be upheld in more than this." As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road, with fields on either hand. The city had entirely vanished. It was a clear, cold winter day with snow upon the ground.
"Good heaven!" said Scrooge,
clasping his hands together as he looked about him.
"I was bred in this place. I was a boy here."
"Your lip is trembling," said the ghost. "You recollect the way?"
"Remember it?"
cried Scrooge with fervour.
"I could walk it blindfold."
"Strange to have forgotten it for so many years," observed the ghost. "Let us go on." They walked along the road, Scrooge recognizing every gate and post and tree, until a little market town appeared in the distance, with its bridge, its church, and winding river. Some shaggy ponies now were seen trotting towards them, with boys upon their backs, who called to other boys in country gigs and carts, driven by farmers. All these boys were in great spirits, and shouted to each other until the broad field was so full of merry music that the crisp air laughed to hear it. "These are but shadows of the things that have been," said the ghost. "They have no consciousness of us." Scrooge knew and named them, every one. Why was he filled with gladness when he heard them give each other Merry Christmas as they parted at crossroads and byways for their several homes? What was Merry Christmas to Scrooge? Out upon Merry Christmas! What good had it ever done to him?
"The school is not quite deserted," said the ghost. "A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still."
Scrooge said he knew it, and he sobbed. They left the high road by a well-remembered lane, and soon approached a mansion of dull red brick. It was a large house, but one of broken fortunes, for their walls were damp and mossy, their windows broken, and their gates decayed. Entering the dreary hall, and glancing through the open doors of many rooms, they found them poorly furnished, cold, and vast. They went, the ghost and Scrooge, across the hall, to a door at the back of the house. It opened before them, and disclosed a long, bare, melancholy room, made barer still by lines of plain desks. At one of these, a lonely boy was reading near a feeble fire, and Scrooge sat down and wept to see his poor forgotten self as he used to be.
"I wish,"
Scrooge muttered, putting his hand in his pocket and looking about him, after drying his eyes with his cuff.
"But it's too late now."
"What is the matter?"
asked the spirit.
Nothing, said Scrooge. Nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should like to have given him something. That's all.
The ghost smiled thoughtfully and waved its hand, saying as it did so, Let us see another Christmas. Scrooge's former self grew larger at the words, and the room became a little darker and more dirty. There he was, alone again, when all the other boys had gone home for the jolly holidays. He was not reading now, but walking up and down despairingly. Scrooge looked at the ghost, and with a mournful shaking of his head, glanced anxiously towards the door. It opened, and a little girl, much younger than the boy, came darting in, and putting her arms about his neck, and often kissing him, addressed him as her dear, dear brother. "I have come to bring you home," said the child, clapping her tiny hands. "To bring you home, 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 home for good and all, home for ever and ever. Father is so much kinder than he used to be. That home's like heaven. He sent me in a coach to bring you, and you're to be a man," said the child, opening her eyes, "and are never to come back here. But first we're to be together all the Christmas long, and have the merriest time in all the world." She clapped her hands and laughed. Then she began to drag him in her childish eagerness towards the door. "Always a delicate creature, whom a breath might have withered," said the ghost. "But she had a large heart."
"So she had,"
cried Scrooge.
"You're right."
"She died a woman," said the ghost, "and had, as I think, children."
"One child,"
Scrooge returned. "True," said the ghost. "Your nephew." Scrooge seemed uneasy in his mind, and answered briefly,
"Yes."
Although they had but that moment left the school behind them, they were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city. It was Christmas time again, but it was evening, and the streets were lighted up. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
"Know it?"
said Scrooge.
"Was I apprenticed here?"
They went in. At sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig, sitting behind such a high desk that if it had been 2 inches taller he must have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement,
"Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again!"
Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and looked up at the clock, which pointed to the hour of 7.
"Yo-ho there, Ebenezer, Dick!"
Scrooge's former self, now grown a young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow prentice.
"Dick Wilkins, to be sure," said Scrooge to the ghost. "Bless me, yes, there he is."
"Yo-ho, my boys," said Fezziwig. "No more work tonight, Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer. Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here."
Clear away? There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away or couldn't have cleared away with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute. In came a fiddler with a music book. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the three Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came the 6 young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In they all came, one after another, some shyly, some boldly, some gracefully, some awkwardly, some pushing, some pulling. In they all came, anyhow and everyhow. Away they all went, 20 couples at once, hands half round and back again the other way, down the middle and up again, round and round in various stages of affectionate grouping. There were more dances, and there were forfeits, and more dances, and there was cake, and there was a big piece of cold roast, and there were mince pies and plenty of beer. But the great effect of the evening came after the roast, when the fiddler struck up Sir Roger de Coverley. Then old Fezziwig stood out to dance with Mrs. Fezziwig.
top couple, too, with a good stiff piece of work cut out for them. 3 or 4 and 20 pair of partners. People who were not to be trifled with. People who would dance and had no notion of walking.
When the clock struck 11, this domestic ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig took their stations, one on either side of the door, and shaking hands with every person individually as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas. When everybody had retired but the two prentices, they did the same to them, and thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under a counter in the back shop. During the whole of this time, Scrooge had acted like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene, and with his former self. He corroborated everything, remembered everything, enjoyed everything, and underwent the strangest agitation. It was not until now, when the bright faces of his former self and Dick were turned from them, that he remembered the ghost.
"A small matter," said the ghost, "to make these silly folk so full of gratitude."
"Small!" echoed Scrooge.
"Why, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money. 3 or 4, perhaps."
"It isn't that," said Scrooge,
heated by the remark, and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter, self.
"It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune."
He felt the spirit's glance and stopped. "What is the matter?" asked the ghost.
"Nothing in particular," said Scrooge.
"Something, I think," the ghost insisted.
"No," said Scrooge. I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now. That's all."
His former self turned down the lamps as he gave utterance to the wish, and Scrooge and the ghost again stood side by side in the open air.
"My time grows short," observed the ghost. "Quick." This was not addressed to Scrooge, but it produced an immediate effect, for again Scrooge saw himself. He was older now, a man in the prime of life. His face had not the harsh and rigid lines of later years, but it had begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in the eye, which showed the passion that had taken root. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in a mourning dress, in whose eyes there were tears, which sparkled in the light that shone out of the ghost of Christmas past.
"It matters little," she said softly.
"To you, very little. Another idol has displaced me, and if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve."
"What idol has displaced you?" he rejoined.
"A golden one."
"This is the even-handed dealing of the world," he said. "There is nothing on which it is so hard as poverty, and there is nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth."
"You fear the world too much," she answered gently. "All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one, until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Have I not?"
"What then?" he retorted. "Even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? I am not changed towards you."
She shook her head.
"Am I?"
"Our contract is an old one,"
It was made when we were both poor and content to be so, until in good season we could improve our worldly fortune by our patient industry. You are changed. When it was made, you were another man.
I was a boy, he said impatiently.
Your own feeling tells you that you were not what you are, she returned. I am. May you be happy in the life you have chosen.
She left him, and they parted.
Spirit, said Scrooge, show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight to torture me?
One shadow more, exclaimed the ghost.
No more,
cried Scrooge.
No more. I don't wish to see it. Show me no more.
But the relentless ghost pinioned him in both his arms and forced him to observe what happened next. They were in another scene and place. A room, not very large or handsome, but full of comfort. Near to the winter fire sat a beautiful young girl, so like that last that Scrooge believed it was the same, until he saw her, now a comely matron, sitting opposite her daughter. The noise in this room was perfectly tumultuous, for there were more children there than Scrooge, in his agitated state of mind, could count. But now a knocking at the door was heard, and such a rush immediately ensued that she, with laughing face and plundered dress, was borne towards it, the centre of a flushed and boisterous group, just in time to greet the father, who came home, attended by a man, laden with Christmas toys and presents. Then the shouting and the struggling, and the onslaught that was made on the defenceless porter, the scaling him with chairs for ladders to dive into his pockets, despoil him of brown paper parcels, hold on tight by his cravat, hug him round the neck, pommel his back, and kick his legs in irrepressible affection. The shouts of wonder and delight with which the development of every package was received. By degrees the children and their emotions got out of the parlour, and by one stair at a time up to the top of the house, where they went to bed, and so subsided. And now Scrooge looked on more attentively than ever, when the master of the house, having his daughter leaning fondly on him, sat down with her and her mother at his own fireside. And when he thought that such another creature, quite as graceful and as full of promise, might have called him father, and been a springtime in the haggard winter of his life, his sight grew very dim indeed.
"Bell," said the husband, turning to his wife with a smile, "I saw an old friend of yours this afternoon."
"Who was it?"
"Guess."
"How can I? Tut, I don't know," she added in the same breath, laughing as he laughed. "Mr. Scrooge?"
"Mr. Scrooge it was. I passed his office window, and as it was not shut up and he had a candle inside, I could scarcely help seeing him. His partner lies upon the point of death, I hear. And there he sat alone, quite alone in the world, I do believe."
"Spirit," said Scrooge in a broken voice, "remove me from this place."
"I told you these were shadows of the things that have been," said the ghost, "that they are what they are. Do not blame me."
"Remove me,"
Scrooge exclaimed.
"I cannot bear it. Take me back. Haunt me no longer."
He was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further, of being in his own bedroom. He had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep.